Good evening, everyone. Maya, thank you very much. That was lovely. And Julian, I look forward to hearing you too. I'm going to read one poem from Lordy of Roses and one from Bradley's Fun Line, but I really want to focus on my newest effort. This is a poem from that's set in Lachine from my days when I grew up in Lachine. That's the part of Montreal I'm from, which is kind of this odd little no man's land between the West Island and industrial downtown. So it's called The Water Mine. It's kind of surreal. Is that better? Okay. The brain is mottled green with dark green veins. This once I wish to progress from this smallest infinity to an infinitely smaller one. Let it have the shape and gravity of a watermelon. It must bear the gravid weight of an embrace. The embrace must carry the weight of fear. It is only the wind. The short man with the toothbrush mustache declares his anger. I am angry, he declares. Anger itself is red and slightly sweet. To propose that one loves this person or that woman is to create dusky categories, this flesh, this pulp. Perspiration occurs in the operations of pumps, clanging in the Jenkins tap and valve. On this field behind the town in which we live, bodies bump with the awkward thump of a dropped watermelon. A common insect life scrambles in the tepid air. It is toxic where the sad creatures lie stunned. These images of ridicule, slippery pips spit on the grass. Meaninglessness contains such equality. Dark, voracious space for every pipsqueak dog. There really was a Jenkins Tap and Valve Company. Long gone now. Sadly, I love that place. This one, the Gravity's Plum Line, I always like the show because Andrew Steeves at Gaspro Press does an amazing, amazing job of producing gorgeous books. And his attention to detail, this book has a French cover, his attention to detail is such that he prints on the inside that nobody is likely to ever look at. That kind of thing amazes me. When I first moved to Fredericton, I felt like I had to say hello to New Brunswick. It wasn't just, you know, an immediately obvious place. And I've been there a number of times as a child because my mother is from New Brunswick, in part. And in Fredericton, there's an old railroad bridge, and it was converted a number of years ago into a walking bridge. And it's kind of about a half mile across, and you can walk right out into the middle of the river and look back on the city and feel it. Summertime, you can feel a nice soft breeze coming down the river, and in the wintertime, you don't want to be out there. especially this winter. So this is just called Fredericton. So, I should mention that it was kind of a handshake in Brunswick. Hello. I wrote a whole sequence of poems that follow the St. John River from its headwaters all the way down to where it flows into the ocean of St. John, but it goes to Fredericton. It's a gorgeous river. It's a mythic river. So this is set in, as you'll see, in the spring when the ice is melting. Fredericton, the old railroad bridge. The slow, reassuring ease of the water as it loops around stone pediments verifies the duration of a moment's measure. The jam of logs, buckle of ice, the floods are not biblical, but a local passage in our Book of Common Prayer. The mumble of voices, liturgical, flows into turgid air, the way the undercurrents push to a swell of surface and folding on themselves. In a threaded twist, a skein of liquid time. That day we walked the bridge from end to end, we stood above it, a literal transcendence, and I thought of what it would be to jump, to fold the body like a single autumn leaf and flicker downward through the overlapping whispers of the past. The starlings chittered in the superstructure, a calling from beam to beam, just out of reach, girders the color of rafters after a fire. The water raveled, but I froze the motion by claiming one swirl and followed it as far as the eye could travel. Okay, so this book, Frog Hollow, was very kind enough to print in this weird size because I've been writing these huge long lines and I don't have stanza breaks, and sometimes it can be a little overwhelming, even to me. And the poet, the Canadian poet Tim Wilbert, was at a conference, and he's a philosopher as well. And there was a question afterwards, and somebody says, you know, wanted to know more, and you know, how do you get philosophy to poetry? And he said, it's not like we actually just take Immanuel Kant and put him in poems. And I thought, well, where's the gauntlet? Throw it down. So each of these poems has snippets of Critique of Pure Reason put into them. And I'll start with the opening poem, which is just called Critique of Pure Reason. Actually, this poem was written on a journey I took up to Prince George, where I lived for a while. And of course, that journey was there for many years, and some people know it. Here we go. Is it that it is pure, that it is driven, that it is snow? Snow in the reeds where I stand as subject, as simple subject, as identical subject in every state of my thought. Winter cups its hands into time and freezes it into a skim of ice. Time is partly opaque, its pack of crystals occluding knowledge of the weeds. They are at the bottom of the pond, beyond desire. This is neither elegy nor ode. It is ice marked by the skate edge of time. I stand by my thoughts, here, at the edge of reason. There is open water out toward the middle of the slough, where the water birds congregate. There I was a child in a photograph. I was the ancient of days. I was the man who didn't have a ticket, who waited outside, waiting to glimpse the performers glissando from stage door to the waiting limousine. It happened in the theater of the trees, hovering in shadow, the telos of snow. I had to wait to hear the whole song because reason is shaped that way. It has that kind of beauty, categorical. Look at the graph the ridge of the mountains makes, and there you will see it. It is more true than accurate, and more accurate than true. The pond is in the shape of an O, and if you make an O to think of me now and think of me then, a child who could not match socks, who pressed the scraps of leaves into books and stared at Jack Frost painting colors in the only colored print the books contained. It is trees that bring me to the aggregate of actual feelings, the scent of the gardens, the softness of the lawns, the brick and the wood, and yes, the people who inhabit them. A few windows flickered with television light. I must be getting home, house and home, they say, knowing they are the same, knowing we are different. So I guess I'm in Montreal. I'll read a poem about the house I grew up in. I lived there for 20 years before I moved downtown and was going to Yale and was going to this amazing bookstore. If you don't know it, it's called the Word Bookstore. Yeah, I should go there. It's called Fantasia on a Place I Once Knew. The door and the door jamb, the finishing nails. The picture in the hallway slightly skewed. The dishes drying in the rack and the damp cloth folded neatly over the faucet, odor a little like yeast, dangling over the stainless sink, water in the drain a moment ago. The hissing steam of the iron as it waits to press heat into the shirt, the heat of the shirt, the way the sleeves are flattened out into creases. What was in the picture hanging askew in the hall? Who thought the straight and narrow hall should go into the kitchen with its gleaming counters, the mixer and its mixing bowls tucked into the corner? The telephone relaxing quietly on the end table set under the picture in the hall. The print of a muddy shoe on the runner that runs the length of the hall toward the kitchen. The muddy shoe on the boot rack in the vestibule by the door. The overcoat hanging in the closet in the vestibule. The beige paint on the wall where the picture hangs over the end table and the telephone nestled there. The door jammed shut because of the pure concept of that cold. Because of the cold air seeping through the jamb of the door and lingering in the vestibule and settling inside the toes of the shoes sitting in the boot rack. The gurgle of the water in the cast iron radiator, the mittens drying, the fine edge of a smell between burnt toast and dough rising in the oven. And over the sink in the kitchen clock, and under the glass, magnified Roman numerals. The ironing board stretching its legs onto kitchen linoleum, black and white chessboard linoleum, yellowed under floor wax. Placemats, sparkling egg cups, juice glasses, forks and knives, and the concave dip of the spoons, the kitchen's white walls. The jam and the jam jars lying on the kitchen counter. Knowledge that falls within the bounds of beige walls in the hall, picture in the glass over the picture, sheen of the light that reflects from the glass over the picture. The narrow Persian runner with its shoe print etched into the patterns of reds and golds and beige woven into its wool. The smell of the wool heating on the radiator, warmth of the woolen overcoat in the closet, the white china dishes drying in the rack, the carving knife and the spatula in the dish rack, the picture in its plain wooden frame where the glassy black of the telephone sits, next to the plain wooden chair beside the end table and the slight curve of the legs of the end table. The hall and the kitchen, the vestibule, the finishing nails. And I'm going to go to a kind of elegy for no one. So you'll understand why it's an elegy for no one once I read the poem. And the poem's called For a Loved One I Didn't Know. We are the ones mourning, though doves line the telephone wire, seven notes in gravity. And we don't know for whom we are mourning. We say it is for the flicker of a match in the candle wax, for the corona of the sun's epilepsy. We say it for the sensible flower, sick foil, five fingers of delight, the missa brevis, the call and response, the mourning doves. Please be quiet, they sing in the library of daylight, each opening its book of songs. Cathedral light, blind tracery above the west door, and there to stray into the end's imaginarium. The intensity of the rose window, hush of the transept. Choose the west door. That's where the doves have flown. That's where the stones are. Indecipherable dates rubbed soft and mossy by a few centuries of damp. I am ready to lie there, for the footpath is branching ahead in the bramble, the soul of thorns and the tangle. So if he will accompany me, friend and friend and friend, we will name each weed that grows in the grasses. This one is winding smoke in the dark room. That one, the hooded doctor's crooked finger. Here, broom in the morning, cowl of the praying monk, the exceptionally rare half notes on the treble clef. See how it hangs seven bells in sorrow, hangs in remembrance of you, the one I didn't know. No studded blossom, no bouquet, no corsage, no cut flowers bundled on the ground. Not a single sepal of the words you might have spoken, no decoration, no artifice. Whoever you were, your name like the stops on a wooden flute I played as a child. We should walk away from scenes like this. We should walk back to reasons Gothic, the heft of the stones and the arches, the slate of the floor, the bone-shattering cord and God's organ pipes. We should stay with the proverbs provided. But there, on the path, amongst the weeds, listening to the plain song of the various birds, this is what we knew. Work, and the work is done. Sing, and the singing's done. Love, and the work of love is never done. The singing never done. And I'm going to end with a poem that's it's about a bee, sort of. In the American Southwest, they have beetles, bees, these big black things. Somebody said they're black bees without yellow stripes. But to me, they looked like maybe bees, maybe beetles. I don't think the caption out of the corner of my eye anyway. And besides, the poem is about tons of other stuff, too. It's called Addition and Subtraction and All the Gorgeous Functions. I think Lee is going to quieten things a bit and forgive herself. Thank you, Lee. Addition and Subtraction and All the Gorgeous Functions. Love is anonymous in the pinched gray light. I had asked for it that way, I suppose. I am against forgetting. The music repeats over and over, the harsh music. Spirals and feathers lurk in the X's, Y's, and Z's that slip through my fingers. I had forgotten the flute and could not remember its fingering. But suddenly combinatory theory came back to me, and I could see the probabilities of sunlight, singular shafts through the monochrome of cloud, bundles of quanta scrubbed together and laid across the ground like stooks of wheat. Sunlight with flashcards, everyone knows mottled weather is more beautiful than the placard of the cloudless day. A house overlooks an empty lawn, a rose garden. Why are we so afraid of that Arabic zero when we know it so well? I came here with murder in my heart. I longed for the zero sun. When there was no sunlight, I tried to pry open the tin plate steel of the sky of a can opener so sunlight might happen in the probability wave. Why not calculate the love you have and carry the remainder? I remember the math now, the beatings in high school. The favorite music, my favorite music, simply by way of combination, admit no other principle. There is the pear on the tree in its hard green shell, and the pear on the ground slumping into its blackening slumber, and there is personality, each pear sparkling in the yellow sunlight, each a character actor in an ensemble cast. I studied hard, clambered the steps of each proof into the random storage of its attic. I could assign no other basis for thinking than the singular empty eye. But the empty set still has its pointed parentheses, arrows aimed at infinity for any set A, the Cartesian product of A, and the empty set is exquisitely empty. But skylight peeks through cloud, especially this soft-bellied slackwater, hanging around all day, monotonous monochrome, a shrug of gray, a worn-out sweater, speaking its existence with an occasional splatter of rain, the patter of water on a picnic table, the plastic bread wrapper studded with droplets, and a seeded tang of smell in the earth, and the suck of a boot in the mud. I wouldn't have it any other way, feet on the ground, head in the clouds. A listless shroud conceals the horizon you don't believe in anymore. Math is that kind of anonymity, slack in personality, no apparent music in the tables and the matrices, the originary rooms from which the numbers were generated. The numbers now unlocked inside a cotton gin, combed of seed. Alter that number, take as many times as you may. Quotient, quotidian, quotation, sure, but the grid left over, that is the important thing. So often in the division, something left behind that should not have been rounded up or rounded down. I have a long poem. Poem about bees is another poem. Sorry about that. So, you'll have to buy a book to see what